This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at MOFAD.org.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, Heritage Radio Network's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Black culture through the complicated lens of agriculture. We speak to Carla Hall about her uncompromising soul food recipes.
And I was like, what am I doing? Why am I changing my family's history for another culture?
We also hear from Gabriela Rodriguez at Harlem Grown's Youth Farm Uptown.
About empowerment and, you know, community resilience building through this work. Food is kind of just a vehicle.
Leah Penniman addresses feeling like an outsider in the farming community.
I could count on my two hands the number of people who appeared to be POC, people of color. And so I literally would go around little slips of paper and say, hey, meet at 1 o'clock under this tree so we can talk.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's Meat plus sign THREE, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio. This is our special New York City Beer Week episode. We're going to go pretty deep today with one of our longtime guests and the brewer owner of Big Alice, Mr. Kyle Hurst. How are you, sir?
Awesome, Jimmy.
We've got a great room in here tonight on Heritage Radio Network. We've got Matt McCall from Coney Island Brewery and Kevin and Danny from Island to Island.
Hey.
And Danny, it's been special. We've had you on this whole month of February. It's really great having you here. You're doing a live Instagram.
Thank you.
That's pretty awesome. And Kevin, so great to see you, man.
Nice to see you.
We really love this New York City craft beer community. So this is a special show. Another reason it's special is Kyle, you know, you and I have, ever since you opened, you guys opened Big Alice, the first small brewery back in 2013. And you've been on a regular guest on shows. We've done a lot of specials together. So it's a good buddy. You made my day, man.
It's good to see you, Jimmy. It's been too long.
I'm happy to see you. But I want to just trace the arc. I think Big Alice is a good story for what New York City, you know, brewing has been through. Let's go back to the beginning. So 2013, when you guys opened, you were, if not the smallest, one of the smallest breweries in the whole city. But back then it was the norm. I remember that a guy on Long Island, Blind Bat, had opened with like a one-barrel system in his garage. And Richie Castagna at Bridge and Tunnel, the same thing, had these licensed garage breweries. And you guys were like part of a refrigeration company. And what tell us how you opened. What size brewery was that?
So when we opened, we were on, it's a Sabco was the brand. It's more or less converted, you know, half barrel kegs. So, you know, full keg capacity is 15.5 gallons. We yielded about 10 to 12 gallons per batch. You know, when we started, we actually pre-sold all of our beer like a CSA. We called ourselves a CSB. And for $200, you got two bottles a month from us, and we pre-sold 200 bottles every 6 months. So like a CSA farm, we got all the money up front, use that then to buy our ingredients and make our beer. And back then we were open 2.5 hours a week. Every Friday we were open from 5 to 7:30. You could come pick up your beer share. Every now and then we had a couple extra bottles to sell, maybe as many as a dozen. And, after three rounds of that, we realized we had quite a long waiting list, and maybe we should pursue this a little bit further.
But you guys, it was like you guys, it was so quaint, and, you know, everything was small, very crafty back then.
Quaint is a word for it, for sure. Yeah.
But, you know, there's something I loved about that. And, you know, one of your beers was a carrot beer, but it stood out because it's like, wow, what was the carrot beer?
So it was a carrot and oat IPA. So a lot of oats in there, which is, you know, they're actually used predominantly now in a lot of IPAs in the in the East Coast here. But, you know, at the time, we were taking, you know, fruits, vegetables, spices, things we got from our, you know, CSAs that we were members of, and, you know, kind of whatever came in, kind of like canning, whatever the flavors of the season were, we were brewing with them. You know, we did 6 or 8 beers a month. We brewed 1 weekend a month. And, you know, so as a result, we had, you know, gotten carrots and oats that week, and that's what went into our beer. So we didn't really know until we picked up, and then we'd figure out, all right, what do we have? we're going to make these beers, and how do we, you know, divvy these things up?
And Kyle's smiling when he tells that story.
It's a fun story, yeah.
And then that was a different time. It was 2013. I mean, it was like, what was the big turnaround? Was it 2014, the state changed something?
Well, actually, it was kind of the end of 2012, you know, the first laws were starting to change, and that's what, you know, kind of gave us the idea and the impetus to, you know, to get a license. We were brewing once a month anyway, and, you know, we were making 5-gallon batches, and we thought, well, if we do 10-gallon batches and sell half of it, we more or less can get the public to pay for our hobby. So that was all, you know, all we ever set out to do. That was our intention. But it's funny, when we opened, we thought we were late. We're like, oh, we should have been open a year ago or a year and a half ago. And we thought we were really behind the curve. And, you know, we thought we were at one point going to be the first brewery opening in Queens. I think many of us did, because kind of it all happened, you know, right kind of late 2000. We actually got our license in 2012, but didn't brew our first beer until 2013. But yeah, it was, you know, Rockaway Open, Single Cut, and then it's unclear to me and Rich if Bridge and Tunnel was third or us, and I guess it doesn't really matter. I think they may have been first to the public, but, you know, we might have been first to brew, but, you know, if I'm wrong, I apologize to Rich, but, you know, we've had this conversation, neither one of us know for sure either.
It's like deciding who has the oldest bar in New York City. Is it McSorley's? Is it...
Yeah, there's always a caveat. Inn? Right. Yeah.
One day that'll be you. Be like, what was the first brewery in New York City? Way back then.
Well, oddly enough, the first brewery license in Queens wasn't any of us. It was Beyond Kombucha, if you remember those guys. So their kombucha had 0.5% alcohol, and they got the first brewery license. They ended up closing. I think the owner had moved out of state, but you know, they closed about a year or so after we were all open. But they did have the first you know, Queens, you know, brewer's license, and they were part of Queens Beer Week back in the day.
Wow, and then back then it was... Coney Island Brewing with Jeremy Cowan. He was real good at promotions and marketing. He mostly was a contract brewer then, but he opened the world's smallest brewery. It was in Coney Island. But what size was that then, Matt?
Yeah, I think it was actually like a 1-gallon system. Like, they were
so even smaller than Big Al's.
Doing it in buckets, yeah.
When Sandy came and, you know, did its damage to Coney Island, Jeremy actually called us and said, "Congratulations, you're now the smallest brewery in New York City."
Oh, wow.
But I don't know if you heard anything about, you know, Matt, now you've been the brewer at Coney Island Brewing now for, what, like a year now?
Year and a half, yeah.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about those early days? They weren't that long ago, but they are kind of early days.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, I mean, you know, not so much from the source, but when I got hired at Coney Island, I kind of watched some YouTube videos and kind of learning about Coney Island history. And one of the first videos that pops up is, you know, the old Coney Island Brewery, where they had a 1-gallon system that used to make funnel cake ales and things of that nature and little buckets in there, and called it the world's smallest brewery as part of the freak show that they have down there on the corner there.
Yeah, the biggest guy making the smallest beer, right?
That's right.
Wow. And then Kevin and Danny, so, like, just to take us back, just give us a quick little overview again about when you guys opened, because you're out in Flatbush, Brooklyn, kind of like what the climate was like then, just to give us how set the story a little bit.
We opened in phases. So we started back in 2014. We started in an 8x8 container, you know, fighting with the city to figure out who we were and what we were and what jurisdiction we were under. And it was like an official grand opening launch 2017. And the climate out there in Flatbush was not craft beer at all. Like, people were like, what do you mean you make your own beer? How long is it going to take for me to get a beer? Like, I got to wait 2 weeks to get a beer. It's like, no, we're just going to pull this handle and you'll have a beer in an instant. So, and it's been changing because we live in a neighborhood, not live, I don't live there anymore. We work in a neighborhood where it's changing so rapidly. There's new people coming in, there's old people going out. And I don't mean that in terms of age. I mean, there's just a lot of turnover, especially with New York City building up, which is constantly doing. That neighborhood is currently part of the new development. And so we've got new minds coming in, people who are open. They want to explore the neighborhood and find out what's going on. And that's where we've really been able to tap into the market for the people who are looking for something new and different and a reason to belong to that community.
No, that's great. And so the next step, so, you know, starting out, but so now, you know, Kyle, you guys always were at the forefront, you know, to me. Like I said, you've participated in radio shows and special events and the Brewers Guild since day one. I mean, when and what did you guys do next? So you started off with this, like, 10-gallon system. And what was the next step for you guys? And
so next step after that, like I said, we got this long waiting list and decided, you know, we should, you know, maybe look into doing this as, you know, as a, you know, as a career, or as a bigger project than what we'd set out to do, brewing once a month and opening 2.5 hours a week. So it was kind of right around our 1 year anniversary being open to the public, which would have been June of 2014. We ended up finding a brew pub in Stamford, Connecticut that was, you know, near the end of a 10 year lease and not renewing it. So we kind of went up there. I think they were calling the landlord's bluff and, you know, hoping they could keep the space at a lower rate. Turns out, you know, he wasn't bluffing. So it turned out to be a great deal for us, but we had to get the equipment out before the end of their lease. So we kind of got there at the beginning of the month. We had a couple of weeks to get it out for a set price. Fortunately, my business partner owns the HVAC Richie, company, and he knows riggers. So we got a rigger up there in a couple of weeks, pulled everything off. All the tanks were up in mezzanines, so we had to, you know, get equipment down, get it all on a flatbed, and
I've seen videos of guys with rigging loading giant HVAC systems on roofs. I mean, I guess those guys know what they're doing, right?
Yeah. I mean, they close streets down to make this stuff happen. So, you know, getting some, you know, brewing equipment out. And even that, when we made that first expansion, you know, it was it's a 5-barrel brew house. I think we had 2 5-barrel fermenters, 2 8. We were told they were 10s, but if we put 10 in there, we had a mess on the floor. So we got those out, and then it came with 7 serving tanks. So we ended up with 11 tanks in total. And then we kind of annexed a little additional space from the landlord. So when we started out, our space was 1,024 square feet. So we had about 1,000 square feet. We added 180 square feet with that expansion, which was awesome. So that gave us a place to refrigerate and serve beer. So then we added a tap room. Initially, we went from 2.5 hours on Friday to Friday, Saturday, Sunday. After a few months of that, we went to 5 days a week.
And then how did your brewing and the products you were making change once you got that kind of like basic system?
Yeah, so when we started the Sabco system we were talking about, we did 141 different beers. And every time we brewed, it was a one-off. Like I said, we got the ingredients from our CSA or a local food co-op, and then we'd figure out what we were going to brew. So we were always doing one-offs.
You also made a lot of interesting beers, like a lot of stronger beers, interesting stouts.
Yeah, I did a math.
Things that for me were too almost undrinkable. They were so strong sometimes.
We averaged about 11%. I think the biggest beer we ever made was 15.3. But yeah, we had
Matt, you have no idea. You get the special bottle. Every once in a while I would do at Jimmy's 43, I'd do a Big Al's bottle night, and I would open a couple of bottles and be like, this is great, man. 11% stout.
Probably, and we gave them all style names, but they probably were all barley wines at the end of the day. But really big beers, boozy, really malt forward, and while that kind of worked for us at that stage, it wasn't awesome, for a long term. Once we opened a tap room, we wanted people to sit down and have more than one beer, without getting ill or too drunk to leave our space. So We dialed that back. So initially, we introduced a few new beers and a couple of favorites from that old system. The first beer we repeated ended up being our jalapeno rye, and I brought a version of it tonight. But the reason we ended up being that our first regular beer is the lines, the draft lines from putting a jalapeno beer through it ended up getting stained, and we had it in a 10-barrel serving tank, which was equivalent to 20 kegs. And by the time we tried to put something else on the, even though we cleaned the lines, the damage was beyond repair.
We were talking about that before. We're gonna jump ahead and talk about that later because I know Matt's smiling and Danny's smiling.
So delicious! I can't wait to try the barrel aged one. Oh my god!
But let's jump over. So Matt, you know, since the time you've come into Coney Island, we had you on last week, but give us a recap. So you guys are at the minor league baseball stadium in Coney Island. There's a brewery there,
right?
And since you've been there, what changes have you made there?
Yeah, so I mean, changes are always happening in Coney Island in general. Right now, they have our entire street ripped up, replacing storm drains and things after Sandy happened. They realized the infrastructure just wasn't ready to handle that kind of flooding. It was about 6 feet up in our current space. The water was so that going on with the new construction. They're putting up all kinds of apartment buildings and stuff. They decided to replace all the drainage systems and the water mains and all that, which is awesome. It's going to be great when it's done, but right now it's kind of a mess. So we actually had to kind of close down for a month because of it. But outside of that, you know, our space since I've been there, and since we've been there, I should say, is 1,500 square feet, not much bigger than what you got at Big Alice. And our tap room is probably about 500 of that. So it's really small. We can only fit 8 people inside. But we recently took over the space next to us, which is about 3,000 square feet. So that's all going to be retail space. We're knocking down some walls in a couple months here and hope to be ready by June for it. But it's going to open up a lot more options for us, not only to get more people in the door, but to kind of not be such a seasonal brewery, because when you can only fit 10 people in your tap room at a time in the winter, it kind of makes it difficult to have any kind of events or reason for people to come.
Do you
down
know when Coney the Coney Island Mermaid Parade is?
It's in June. I believe it is June 15th. Don't quote me on that. I'll have to look it up during the break. But yeah,
that's the day to go out there. Maybe, yeah. And maybe not for the faint of heart, but it's a great day.
It's a phenomenal time.
So, and Danny, and so like again, when you guys first started, you know, I know you had certain visions of what you were going to make. I think you were also making like Caribbean-inspired juice fermented drinks. What did you find back then was the easiest thing to sell, the thing that people were most willing to buy?
Beer.
Dallas, Kevin, come on.
Yeah, come on.
Kevin, you came all the way from Texas. Come on. I've been waiting for you for 2 weeks.
So I think the easiest thing for us to sell was the our sorrel-infused IPA, which was hopped like a regular IPA, dry hopped, but it had a little honey and sweet finish to it. That people really enjoyed, but still had that aroma and bitterness from the hops. So I think that one was...
Yeah, that was the easiest.
Yeah, that was the easiest to sell.
That was the Mighty Sparrow. And then we had another one that was called the beer that Marlon does order, which was literally a regular ass beer. Like, that was what it said on the menu, regular ass beer.
Tastes like beer?
Yeah, just tastes like beer. It's just like plain old beer. Nothing special. I think it was like a blonde. It was nothing special about it. It was just, it was balanced. It was just a good beer. So people was like, oh, you sell beer. Like, yeah. And then we were like, we also make it. And then that confused them, but it was a regular beer. So, yeah.
They were good.
It was a good replacement to like a Corona.
Yeah, that's good. And Kyle, let's keep going forward with you, man. So, you know, you guys had the new system, you had your tap room open, and, you know, what beers were moving for you guys? How did you guys evolve from those single large bottles of 11% beer?
So when we first started, you know, we still tried to do bigger beers. Well, we weren't doing the 11% and the 15% anymore. We did a honey wheat beer that still checked in at about 9%, and you know, so all of that, you know, kind of made it. We did a gunpowder tea beer that was, you know, also probably 9.5, and all of that was great, and people loved it. But I don't know if they loved the beer as much as they loved the alcohol content. But we, for the first probably year of our having our tap room, we didn't sell any IPAs. I was kind of making a point, you know, but mm-hmm. I was cutting off my nose to spite my face, because no matter what you have on, to you know, to Kevin's point, you know, your best selling beer is going to be your IPA, because that's what the public knows. So when we had people, we finally got to the point where people were coming in, they were looking at our draft list, which is, you know, really, you know, diverse and all these different things going on, but there were no IPAs. So people, you know, after somebody actually walked out without buying anything, I'm like, you don't like craft beer? Yeah, but I don't like IPAs. I'm like, you know, I really kind of cringed at that. I'm like, you're kind of missing the point, because there's really a lot to really like and enjoy. Yeah. And the reason I did that was, like, you know, as Americans, we were raised, you know, watching, you know, the macro beer commercials, and I don't remember which brand it was anymore, but there was the bitter beer face commercial. So we've been programmed to think that bitter is bad. And I love craft beer. And I didn't want somebody who was new to craft beer to be their introduction to craft beer to be an IPA. So if you've only drank, you know, American lagers, and then your introduction to what we do is an IPA, you're going to be like, nope, not for me, and never come back.
Yeah.
So I was really trying to avoid that. And like I said, I was trying to make a point, and it was foolish of me. But so we started, now we do a wider variety of beers, and including a, you know, a couple of different IPAs.
And quick, what are we drinking? Because this is somewhere to get to in the show, the New York
Smash beer. Nice segue, Jimmy.
Beer.
Yeah, so we're drinking our Smash beer, which, you know, the educated consumer out there will know that a Smash is a single malt and single hop. For New York City Beer Week, the New York City Brewers Guild does a brew every year that's state malts and state hops. So this IPA is 100% New York State malts and hops. In fact, it's part of a five-way collaboration we did with our maltster, our hop farmer, and then two other breweries in Brooklyn. So Endless Life and Strong Road Brewery.
That's great, man. We're going to talk about so much more on the show. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history, and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio at the Heritage Radio Network. This is our 10th year, and it's the 10th anniversary of Heritage Radio Network. And what I love is that every year I come in around this time, and Roberta's Pizza is closed for the day because it's always their annual staff party. So, you know, Roberta's Pizza is a great place when they close one night a year and have a wild kick butt.
A wild and crazy
staff party. So all the guys are coming in. They're just waking up. But we're here now. Roberta's Pizza. Big shout out to them. Now, this is our 10th anniversary of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. All right. So, Kyle, we're talking. Hey, celebrate and beer week. As you were talking about IPAs in your tap room, both Kevin and Matt were nodding. So, Kevin, what were you going to say about it? I know you wanted to say something about it because you said the first beer that you really had in your tap room that was selling was IPA. But
yeah, we've learned very quickly that IPAs sell. So at one point, I think we had four on. We had an Imperial, a New England, and then two others.
I believe IPA stands for Instant Profits Ahead.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that on a can.
Yeah, someone quick better trademark that one.
Actually, I got it from the New York State Brewers Association, so I can't even claim that myself.
Damn, copyrighted. Yeah. What are we drinking next here?
Hey, wait. But wait, let's keep on, Matt.
Yeah, so I think, you know, personally, going back to my roots, when I was coming out of college, all I drank was, you know, kind of the macro beers that, you know, we were talking about earlier. But the first craft beer that I ever had was an IPA, and I was like, this is awful. I don't like this.
Was it Flower Power?
No,
I happen to love Flower Power, but if that's your first IPA.
That would be a bad one to have for your first one. For the life of me, I can't remember what it was. Probably a Sierra Nevada, which happens to be one of my favorites now, which is kind of ironic. But yeah, I just remember being like, this is just so bitter. How do people like this? And that's kind of how I felt about beer at first too, I guess. So it's just kind of a progression from. And to your point, you know, anytime somebody's new to craft beer, when, especially at our brewery, they're like, oh, I don't like beer. I'm like, I bet you I got something for you. Let me.
So what do you have for them?
Normally, since we're so seasonal, most of our traffic comes in the summer. I'll have at least one sour or you know, something light like our Kolsch beach beer or Mermaid Pilsner, something like that that's really approachable, that's, you know, not over the top in flavor, but kind of and we there's a long-running joke at I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but that's okay. Our Merman IPA, I always call our Gateway IPA, because it's the kind of the IPA that to lead you into other IPAs. Yeah. And it's because it's not bitter.
That wasn't, I thought you were going to say something offensive.
Or... No. Well, you know.
I was ready to put Matt was going to put the beep on you. Yeah. Gateway, watch
Gateway
out.
Gateway IPA.
And Kevin, what do you guys serve? So instead of the IPA when someone's, what was that beer you said? You have the regular beer? What is your regular beer?
What is our regular beer
now
right
it's
now?
Different. It's the Trini Sweet Team now.
Yeah, so right now we have Pale Ale with a little bit of Simcoe and sorrel. It's just two grains, hop, and sorrel, and that's it. That's regular, nice, bright color, and people love it.
Again, when you guys started, I remember, Kevin, you're married, but were you more of the brewer from the beginning? Or you both
so
were brewers?
When we first started...
I don't know, Dan.
Starting to fight, Jimmy.
When we started, I thought she was out of her mind, to be honest with you. I thought it would never work. I thought she was just making stuff up. But, you know, I married her for a reason. And, you know, I just stood by her. And, you know, she was doing a lot of the brewing. She was doing a lot of the heavy lifting and the research. And then I don't know what happened... I guess she had to go back to work and, you know, to fund the business. And I just started doing all that. And it just put a fire in me. And I just started making up stuff, not following any recipes, just throwing together what I think tastes good.
Amen.
Yeah. And I'm going to step us back to the first beer we're drinking, the Smash beer. Again, Kyle, what's that beer?
So Big Alice, what? It's a 100% New York State IPA. We called it Agriculture. Because it's brewed with our hop farmer, with our maltster. So it's, like I said, 100% New York State malts, hops, two other breweries in Brooklyn.
Strong Rope's at him with you.
Yep, Strong Rope and Endless Life, who isn't open yet, but they'll be opening soon. So the five of us all got together and made this beer. You know, there's an argument out there that we're looking to disprove that you can't make a good IPA with New York State ingredients. And we're hoping that we're proving that wrong with this beer.
Yeah. Well, then on that note, just quickly, so Kevin and Danny, are you guys also a New York State farm brewery license?
Yes.
And what are some other ingredients that you guys are using? And well, I actually want to get into talking about, you know, the quality of the ingredients and that aspect of buying in New York State.
Yeah, right now we're using about 60% New York State grown ingredients. That's between grain, hops, and apples. Some of our beers, most of our beers are about 100%. On the hops right now, we switched over to 100% hops just because we have to buy so much to work with the hop farmers. And I think that we came up with a nice mix that complements the style of beers we make, which are really fruit forward. And then we do adjuncts that are only ingredients that grow in the Americas. So from Canada to Argentina, Mexico to the Caribbean, we focus on indigenous American ingredients as adjuncts outside of New York.
Yeah. And Kevin, Kyle, earlier you were saying that just now New York State's starting to actually audit and try to track really how this program has been doing.
Right. So the farm law, the Farm Act that was passed, I believe it was 2012 when that was passed, and we opened without it. We ended up switching early in 2013 to get our farm license. But until, you know, it was used to be 20% until January 1st of this year. So now the minimum requirement is 60% for malt and 60% for hops and then 60% for all other ingredients. And you know, when we first got our farm license, we had to get our malt from a maltster in Massachusetts.
Yeah, Valley Malt, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so we had to get our malt from them, and we had to make sure that they were giving us New York State grown grains that were malted. So, you know, you don't grow malt, you grow grain, the grain is then malted. So we had to source it from out of state, which was kind of an odd thing. But the good thing was kind of over each year, so the following year there was one maltster, then there was three, then there was seven. I think we have 13 or something now. So, you know, the purpose of the act was to encourage agriculture within New York State, and you know those numbers support that. And there's, I wish I had the actual numbers in terms of number of acres growing hops and growing grain at this point, but it's really, you know, grown exponentially, and it's been, you know, pre-prohibition, New York State was the number one hop producer in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, prohibition and spider mites and downy mildew and, you know, a number of other things did us in. But we're back there, so we're eking. I don't know. We're up a steep hill with the Pacific Northwest, but we're making more and better hops today than we were, you know, 3-5 years ago.
Support local.
Great. And you guys want to weigh in on the quality of the products? Anybody?
I have no problem. I think I entered at a phase where New York had worked out its kinks, and we've only had flavorful beers come out. I've been I mean, people ask us all the time, like, when did you have a beer that didn't work out the way you wanted to? And I can honestly say that we've never had that situation. I mean, we came close. We came close with one beer that didn't really work, and it was actually a cider. And we added New York craft malt to that cider and re-fermented it. And it was our smash beer last year. And it was going like crazy during opening bash. It was going like crazy at Randolph during the Rupert's Cup, even though we lost because it wasn't any particular style. It was a graph. And it sold out in the tap room faster than any beer to date. And it's funny because that was the one beer that we had a hiccup with. And we added some New York craft malt to it, and it was fine.
Just happy accidents.
Well, that's great to hear. I mean, Matt, you know, how do you feel about the New York ingredients?
And yeah, I was talking to Ted from New York Craft at the opening bash about, I just since I've been here in New York City for a year and a half, how far the New York game has kind of come. You know, I ordered hops last year, you know, that I didn't even know the alpha acid on, and now this year the list compared to last year of the hops you can order is, you know, three times as long. So it's also really cool, you know, working with smaller places like New York Craft. I'd emailed Ted and I was like, hey, what kind of smoked malt do you offer? And he's like, whatever you want. I can literally make you whatever you want. I do it 30 pounds at a time. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, that's something that you can't get, you know, from the big suppliers, which is really neat. But yeah, I think the total quality of the product is just, it's been through the roof.
I know you brewed in other states. You brewed in Pennsylvania brewery. Mm-hmm. What are things you think the New York State, like, you can talk about malt or hop industry, needs to do to keep growing, especially in terms of quality and transparency?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's New York specific. I think it's just more East Coast specific. You know, not to stray too far from your question, but Prohibition wiped out a lot of stuff on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Hops, apples. I mean, we used to be one of the biggest cider apple growing places in the world. In Prohibition, they cut down all the cider trees and
shame. Say it.
Brooklyn.
And they planted,
coming back.
Planted culinary apple trees. So, I mean, it just goes to show, you know, the cider game in the United States is coming back. The New York craft hop and malt game is coming back. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not going to take long. You know
can't
what I mean? A year. Compared to a year ago, we're already light years ahead, and you know, I'd say within the next 5 years, they're going to be making some of the best stuff in the country. So,
you know, since I think 2014 was one of the first beer weeks when a number of New York City breweries made a smash beer with New York ingredients. I've found that it might just be the nature of making a really small batch of beer with really great ingredients. For me, I feel that every year, some of the best beers I taste are the smash beers for Beer Week.
It's interesting how it's changed too, because I remember that year in particular, the first time we all did the smash beer was, you know, there was a definite terroir that you know, you would, you know, it's a wine term that wouldn't necessarily apply to us, but all of the beers had this kind of underlying, you know, characteristic to it, which you mm-hmm. can't really identify, but mm-hmm. you know, I think it all was attributed to the terroir of New York State. And well, you know, either I've adapted to it or the quality of the grain has changed. Maybe it's the malting. I don't know what it is, but it's not as, you know, predominant as it once was. But it was kind of neat in that, you know, we had a flavor that we could identify as New York State. And you know, getting to you know, some of the points made earlier here, you know, about the hops. When we first got our farm license, the only hops we could get from in-state were whole leaf hops. So there was no pelletizing back then, and it was a challenge, and they mm-hmm. were grassy, and it wasn't great, and the quality has only gone up, and you know, people, you know, like Ted on the malt side are really, you know, receptive and responsive to brewers' needs. There's a conference every year where they invite the brewers and the growers to kind of get together and let them, you know, let us tell them what it is we want, and you know, Cornell is playing a big role in that and kind of helping, you know, guide the growers into making things better.
That's great. Last thing, one thing, we're going to take a break in a second. Second beer that we're drinking, once again.
Oh, so I didn't even start drinking it yet. Shame on me.
Yeah, it's really good. I like it.
So the beer we were talking about earlier with the jalapeno rye, so we did a barrel-aged version of it. So we aged it in rye whiskey barrels from Long Island Spirits out in Riverhead, Long Island. So, and for this particular batch, we also got jalapenos grown from a small farm in Astoria in Queens, Hellgate Farms.
That's
so
great.
It's 100% New York State's ingredients in this one, and kind of mellows out the jalapeno with it.
All right, we got so much more to talk about. We'll be back in another minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. It's Todd Shulkin, the host of Inside Julia's Kitchen here on HRN. Inside Julia's Kitchen carries on Julia Child's legacy of introducing the brightest lights in the food world to a wider audience, just as Julia did from her home kitchen. Look for Inside Julia's Kitchen wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, it's the 10th anniversary of heritageradionetwork.org. Check it out. Lots going on this year, including the Hall of Fame. We're really proud that a number of our longtime guests have been selected for the Hall of Fame, including Jeff Allworth of Brivana Blog, who's one of my favorite writers, the author of Beer Bible. So congratulations. And there's going to be a lot more. Every month there's going to be new Hall of Fame selections. So keep checking it out, heritageradionetwork.org. So we're kind of talking about beer, but we're giving a little arc of Big House Brewery and kind of what's happened in the New York City beer scene since 2013 and 14. We're just going on about New York State farm brewery licenses and the smash beer. And Danny, you had a quick question you're going to ask us right before the break.
Oh, I was going to say that think that you have New York City's smallest breweries in the house right now, that we all started from very, you know, we're not going to take no for an answer means, and we're going to build something that is going to make waves. And I think we each do something that make us stand out from the rest of the breweries in New York City. And we started from small means.
That's kind of where we went with Big Alice. And I have to say also, that's a great point, Danny, because Coney Island, you know, whatever you say about it, Jeremy Cowan started it
Mazel tov.
Kind of out of a garage. Is that Jeremy on the line?
No, I'm talking about the beer over here. Danny's celebrating.
But,
it's great.
Well, how big are your spaces? If you want to, since you brought it up, Danny, where do you want to go with that?
So my tap room is 1350, my courtyard is 450, and the brewery is 950.
And what about your tap room, Kyle, right now?
I don't know the tap room dimensions. I know our brewery and tap room is 1,000 square feet. We talked about the 180 square feet we added for our keg room. And then about 2 years ago, we added another 400 square feet. So we're at about 1,600 right now.
Yeah.
Killing it.
Well, we tasted a couple great beers. We tasted two from Big Alice, and next we're going to be pouring Island to Island, and I think we're going to also taste the Coney Island. But I want to hear, keeping this arc of kind of New York City brewing going, I want to keep it going with Kyle. Kyle, so now like the next phase is kind of like suddenly breweries are cool, people are investing money in them, developments like Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Navy Yard, a guy's transmitter, who is also one of the smallest breweries, is now moving their entire operation to Brooklyn Navy Yard, which is going to be an awesome thing. One of my favorite brewers, Anthony Accardi. And you guys, Big Alice, you're actually working with, so again, about the New York State Farm Brewers License, you're working with an aspect of that and opening an industry city. What is that aspect of the Farm Brewers License?
So as part of the Farm Brewers License, we're allowed to open up to 5 branch offices, which allows us to more or less operate in the same capacity that we do in our current facility. If you brew in the other branch offices, you need federal approval, but we're not brewing in the space, so we actually can open tap rooms and retail outlets to bring farm products to the public.
I always thought that was one of the greatest things about that law. I mean, who's taking advantage of it so far? I mean, Rockaway,
I know they definitely are. say we're adding a space. Our space is opening on Friday, on March 1st. There are others. I know a number of them are upstate, but
so I know within Sven, the city. Svendale.
Right, we talked about Svendale.
He's
right.
A Hudson Valley farm brewery, and he's got a little location in Brooklyn.
Is he open in the Brooklyn spot now?
He just opened recently, yeah, okay, near great. Carroll Gardens and Gowanus.
Yeah, so not too far from our spot. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's all these twerks. I just want to give it. It's New York City Beer Week, but I really want to give a big shout-out to New York State and Governor Cuomo. I can say that now. It's not an election year. I think I was lucky to be at the New York State Beer, Wine, Spirits, Cider Summit back in, I think, 2012 and 14, and just seeing this, what they laid out and actually how it's happened has been amazing, and it's kind of why you guys are all in the room.
Yeah,
I mean, not too long ago, 10 years ago, there were four breweries in New York City fighting over market share. I can say it, Six Point in Brooklyn, Six Point Open, and Brooklyn was mad at them because they were trying to take their lines and bars. You know, and now there's, what, 39 breweries?
We're around 40, but yeah, it's, I mean, to your point, you know, 5 years ago, we were fighting for bars to carry craft, you know, and today we're fighting for them to carry local. And some would even argue that we're fighting over which local line they're going to carry. So, you know, we've come a long way. And part of that is brewery driven, but mostly it's consumer driven. So as, you know, consumers are asking for things that are locally made and locally sourced, you know, that's where the Farm Act comes in great, because not only is it made locally, but it's made with ingredients grown locally.
Yeah. And this next beer we have, it's from island to island. Actually, there's some spices in there. Interesting flavors.
Yeah, it's a oatmeal raisin cookie beer. We did it more on the crispy side of a oatmeal raisin cookie, so it has a little bit of toasted aroma flavor to it. And we kept it from being too creamy like a chewy cookie and more like a crispy toasted cookie coming out the oven.
And you've got some interesting names for your beers. There's one, isn't there one about getting pregnant?
Yeah, so this one is Milk Drunk, which comes after the Someone's Gonna Get Pregnant, which is Kevin's beer, a cranberry triple.
And it worked, didn't it?
No.
Yes.
No. The cranberry triple, I just wanted to make something with high ABV, and I wanted to do a triple Belgian ale. And I love cranberries. I know most people don't, but I like the tart and the bitterness of it. Like,
me too. Yeah.
Yeah, for the beer, I didn't add too much hops. What I hopped it with was the cranberry skin.
Oh, nice.
That was left over from when I juiced it. So that's what I used as the bittering for it.
Nice bitterness from there, yeah.
Wow.
I guess that's good stuff.
And then, and Matt, going back, you know, the rest of us can talk about New York State, the farm brewing license. Anything you want to say about that? Because I feel like New York State has really kind of reached a special place.
Yeah, you know? I agree. I think we have the New York State Guild meeting coming up here in about a week, I think, a week and a half. Up in Albany, and I always look forward to going to that. Last year was my first time, and it's just really cool to see the people that are involved into making this stuff happen and the collaborative effort to kind of approach the government and say, hey, here's what we're trying to do. Here's how it benefits the people in the state and, you know, the farmers in the state and the hop growers in the state. And I think that's super important, not only for the beer industry, you know, outside of that completely, you know, just from, you know, the community of people that, you know, bust their back every day to try and make a living. You know, it's a dying age, this day and age. You know, farming and the, you know, more cities are coming up and farms going away, and to support an industry that is kind of trying to revitalize that, I think is really cool. So,
well, I think that everything that we're doing is, the lesson is, you have to keep going. And I'm going to give my political spiel for New York State. I know about over 15 years ago, there was one guy, Dave Kataleski, who was the founder and owner of Empire Brewing up in Syracuse. He happened to be pushing for New York State beer reforms way back when. He was kind of a one-man operation, ran the New York State Brewers Association before there was funding of any kind. And he kind of started it all, led to the governor having a summit and providing funding. And with funding, you know, the New York State Brewers Association was able to hire someone, Paul Leone, and grow. And a lot of things happened. The New York State Liquor Authority made a lot of reforms that were overdue since Prohibition. And then I think my lesson for the New York City brewers is, what we're seeing is, I remember, Kyle, in 2014, you guys were newly formed. You just took over for Beer Week. And now I want to raise my glass and make a cheer to the New York City Brewers Guild, because what you guys have done is what it's hard. It is a lot of changes and a lot of growth and challenges. But I would say this year with the opening bash, the number of out-of-state and non-New York City brewers participating, and I'm sure the number of collaborations that was done this weekend, I know you guys at Big Alice did something on Friday, is amazing. So let's just toast to the fact that there is a vision, and as things grow, it's not always pleasant. There's a lot of competition, but we can just say, wow, finally New York City and New York State beers are on the map. So let's toast to that one.
Cheers, for sure.
And cheers. On that note, this is an official New York City Beer Week event. We had a listener. Just introduce yourself quickly. So you read about this on the New York City Beer Week listing when I posted it, and thank you, Kyle, for your guys putting it up.
Right. I'm just a fan of New York beer in general, and I'm just trying to keep tabs on what's going on this week. And I found myself in a very small recording studio drinking beer with all these really wonderful people and craftsmen. So.
And what's your name?
My name is Will.
Will, and are you a home brewer at all, or?
I have home brewed. I'm a cook at large, recreationally, but I do a lot of baking, which is a form of magic in itself. Fermentation is a really special thing, and the way you can kind of guide different influences to let yeast do its magic is.
And you were nodding your head when Kevin was talking about using the cranberry skins.
Right. Well, it's all related. I mean, between wine, with grape skins and skin contact for added tannin, and just adding in different parameters to make something interesting and expressive. And the fact that you guys are all doing this is awesome.
Great, man. Thanks for joining us. Do you have a question for one of the brewers or for the group? You don't have to.
Yeah. Probably a lot, but you guys should just keep rolling.
Okay. Now, Matt, did you just pour us another beer?
Yeah, I brought this to you last week, but I figured since some new folks here this week, I'd bring it again, and given that it's our smash beer, why not? It's our chocolate rhizome. It's a, as same as Kevin's, all New York State ingredients. We used two-row Vienna chocolate rye and unmalted rye, all from New York Craft, from Ted over there, and then some nugget hops from upstate, and it turned out really cool, 9% ABV, and we're excited about it.
That's a sneaky nine.
Yeah. Kyle, I'm going to ask you, this is a pretty nice progression of taste. We started with, let's go through what we tasted one more time. Your smash beer.
So our smash beer, which is called Agriculture, the Five-Way Club, 100% New York State IPA. Then we went to our jalapeno rye, our barrel-aged jalapeno rye and rye whiskey barrels.
Amen.
And then the Island to Island.
The oatmeal raisin milk drunk.
That was a nice change with like different flavors. And now back to...
chocolate rhizome, yeah.
Yeah, this is a good, nice little tasting, guys.
Yeah, it was a nice great order. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, worked out pretty well.
Well done, Jimmy. you totally orchestrated that, right?
Well, you know.
Enjoying
but,
this.
Last thing, Kyle. So, you guys, the New York State Farm Brewers License, you guys are opening a satellite office, Industry City. So by the time you listen to the show, you could probably go out there. Brooklyn Coors there, which is making sake. I mean, it's pretty really exciting. We know my buddy... Billy Durney from Hometown Barbecue is opening. It's commissary and a Hometown Barbecue deli place.
It's a beautiful space.
There's some good people out there doing good stuff. I'm going to go out there. It's going to be packed on Saturdays. You know that. But let's just wrap it up. So, by you expanding to this other location, just tell us a little bit about that. We have a few minutes. The challenges, how it impacts your business. I mean, you've got a small brewery in Queens still. Are you going to be able to keep up with production?
So that's probably our biggest challenge. We're obviously relying on the public for their support, and it's been great. Demand for beer has been awesome, but South Brooklyn is kind of starving for breweries and craft beer bars. So we talked about the situation a number of years ago. That's kind of what's happening there, but we're seeing it kind of develop over time. We've been working on the space for a little over a year, getting in there and operational. But to your point, or getting back to your question, the biggest challenge I expect us to face is making enough beer. We're doing a nice volume out of our tap room in Queens. We expect to do some multiple of that out of our spot in Brooklyn.
But then as a New York State farm brewery license, you can also sell other New York State beers,
so
too. If you need more beer, you can buy beer.
In our Brooklyn spot, actually in both spots now, we also offer New York State cider. We offer New York State wines. Rooftop Reds would be a great guest for your show, Jimmy, by the way. They're doing great stuff here in Brooklyn. But yeah, so there's, you know, a lot of, you know, other things. We can do spirits. We're still steering away from that in our, you know, New York State Spirits from our tap room. I'm trying to keep us away from being a bar and more of a tap room, but, you know, it's not out of the question for us.
Yeah, that's, we can talk about, that'll be a whole other show. We'll talk about why does beer compete with liquor, you know, when you have a bar. That's another show. Matt?
Yeah, real quick. I think, you know, my wife and I were lucky enough to come last week when you guys had your event, and the space is really cool. And to your point about South Brooklyn breweries, like Coney Island is really outside of, I guess you can consider...
is Coney Island in Brooklyn?
Yes, it is.
Is Rockaway Brooklyn or Queens?
Rockaway is Queens.
Yeah, it's about as far south in Brooklyn as you can get. But, you know, between us and...
Is Evil Twin Brewing in Brooklyn or Queens?
Queens.
Queens. Ridgewood.
Brewing is in Queens, yes. Their tap room is not.
Yeah, but between us and Five Boroughs, you know, we've always been friends. And to have that kind of presence from you guys coming into South Brooklyn, I think is huge, because... we've been trying for years and years and years to show that, you know, craft beer is in South Brooklyn and it's good. And to have more people kind of bring light to that, I think is awesome. Especially in your space, it's really, really cool. And we're looking to working with you guys to kind of grow that.
That's great. And you guys, Kevin, Danny, want to wrap anything about your Flatbush location? Anything for the future?
Lager and Jerk Wing Fest on Saturday.
Tell me again, because I'm you got to go. This is
We're going to have four lagers on. We're doing IPL,
Saturday,
Dunkel,
March,
Vienna, and a Common.
March 3rd?
March 2nd.
March 2nd.
Yeah, come and drink. Get your tickets now so that you can drink all night. More at the door, of course.
What are the best trains to that part of Brooklyn?
25QB.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have that bus, the 49 and the 44, direct from Williamsburg.
And last week you said you're brewing four lagers.
Yes.
For this event.
Yes.
And I think that sounds great.
Yeah.
But do you think anyone shaking their head that's not the right thing?
Oh yeah, there was someone shaking their head at us for sure.
I'm shaking my head because we had to get it done in a month, and being out of state, it was a little difficult. So I find myself this week having to rack three different beers and get it in kegs and
super fast.
Get it ready to go.
Yeah. But I have to say, Kevin and Renee, I want to shout out to them, my team members. They've really been buckling down and getting these lagers out. I was here taking care of the ferments while they were brewing, changing the temperatures, making sure it was regulated. And they are literally on deck this week, making sure that they get out of the fermenters into the bright tank.
Matt, I think we're going to the Jerk Wing and Lager Fest on Saturday. Yeah, man. Hey. All right. So, everyone, this has been a great show. Guys, again... New York City Beer Week. It's so great to be able to talk to you guys a little more in depth. I know it's a very busy week for everybody, and this has been the highlight of my week. On Thursday, I'm going to be at The Gate Brooklyn, going back to old school beer bars, Good Beer Seal tradition, which kind of started all this stuff in 2009. There's going to be a number of beer bar owners from around the state who now are brewers. So there's Thin Man, Rare Form, and Alewife. All of them were former long time. If you heard of The Ruck in Albany, he's got a brewery. You heard of Mike Schatzel in Buffalo. He's got Thin Man Brewery. And you got Crazy Patrick Donner. I can say that. Crazy Patrick Donner is Alewife Brewing.
I'm going there from here.
Yeah. So. But it's been great. So, guys, everyone, just one more time, just say your name, and let's go around the room, and we're going to close it out.
Sure. Matt McCall, head brewer, Coney Island.
Kyle Hurst, Big Alice Brewing Company.
Kevin Brathwaite, Island to Island Brewery.
Danny Oliver, Island to Island Brewery.
Will Howard, recreational baker.
All right. I love that. Bacon and brewing. But guys, thanks for joining us. Big shout out, producer Justin Kennedy, engineer Matt Patterson, intern and assistant producer Dylan Hoyer. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jimmy Carbone, the host here on Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Whoop. Yes, baby. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter. Our handle is @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. and we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.